Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are not looking at a book or a research paper or even a news article.
No.
We are stepping into a very specific, dimly lit, and frankly kind of terrifying room on the internet. We are analyzing a raw, unfiltered discussion thread titled Each Winter Rose.
It's less of a discussion thread and more of a digital rabbit hole.
A rabbit hole with no bottom. And just to set the stage for you listening, this is not your standard Reddit thread or, you know, a Facebook comment section.
What?
This is an anonymous message board, a digital salon where users, let's just call them anons, are debating everything from indie game coding to 19th century diplomatic history.
And they're doing it with this jarring mix of really high-level intellectual analysis and just absolute toxic sludge.
Exactly. And the reason we're looking at this, because I know you're wondering why we'd wade through all that, is because this thread is a perfect artifact of a specific cultural moment.
Yeah, we're trying to decode the anxieties of a group of people who feel completely alienated from modern society. There's a concept that hangs over this entire conversation like a storm cloud. Anomie.
Anomie. Okay. I've heard the term probably in like sociology 101, but let's dust it off. What are we actually talking about here?
So anomie is a concept from the sociologist Emile Durkheim. It describes a condition of instability that results from a breakdown of standards and values.
It's rootlessness.
It's when the rules of society just no longer make sense to you, so you feel disconnected, aimless, and, well, usually pretty angry.
And these users are definitely feeling that. One of them actually drops a quote in the thread that I think perfectly captures this vibe. They're talking about dumplings, of all things.
Right.
And then suddenly pivot to this. I think people go insane from overstimulation. You either care about what happens in the world and have some kind of psychotic break, or you get numb to it all.
And that right there, that is the thesis statement of the modern internet.
You either break or you numb yourself.
Exactly. And what we're going to see today is that this thread is a case study in that numbness. These users are hyper-aware, hyper-literate, but they have retreated into this fortress of irony and cynicism.
So our mission is to figure out what makes these people tick. We're going to look at three main areas where this anomie shows up. First, the indie gaming scene, where they are obsessed with this idea of selling out.
Second, their bizarre, almost forensic analysis of comic strips like Nancy and Sinfest.
And finally, we'll widen the lens to their broader worldview, their political cynicism, and this desperate, almost tragic search for soul in old video games.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with the gaming drama, because if there is one thing the internet loves, it's fighting about video games. This thread spends a massive amount of energy debating the ethics of an RPG called Laysa. The Painful. Now, for context, Laysa is this gritty post-apocalyptic game that started as a DIY crowd-funded darling. But recently, the creator teamed up with a publisher, Serenity Forge, to port the game to consoles, you know, the Switch and PlayStation 5.
And to most people, that sounds like a success story, right? The little guy made it big.
Exactly. You'd think they'd be popping champagne. But in this thread, it's a betrayal.
It's a huge betrayal.
You have this faction of purists who are absolutely allergic to the idea of a publisher. They are calling the creator a shilling, soulless cash grabber.
It's so intense, but we have to look at why they feel that way. It's not just jealousy. There is a deep philosophical belief here that commerce is contamination.
Right.
To these users, the moment you accept money from a publisher or the moment you try to put your game on a normie console like the Switch, you have fundamentally altered the art.
They seem to think that to sell to a mass audience, you have to sand off the edges, make it safe.
Precisely. They value the transgressive art that shocks or disturbs, and they believe a corporation like Sony or Nintendo will never, ever allow that. One user actually refers to Steam, the biggest PC gaming platform in the world, as an open sewer.
Open sewer. That is a strong visual for a digital store.
It is. But think about what that implies. An open sewer is uncontrolled. It's full of refuse. But, ironically, some of them argue that the sewer is better because at least it's free.
And the counter-argument.
Well, the counter-argument in the thread, and there are some pragmatic voices, is that the sewer is just too crowded. They argue that Laysa needs a publisher to handle the boring stuff, like marketing and bug fixing.
So the pragmatists are saying, look, if you want the artists to keep making art, they need to eat, and they need people to actually find the game.
Right. They mention that consoles offer a captive audience, but for the purists, a captive audience is a tainted audience. They would rather the game remain obscure and pure then see it played by someone who doesn't get it.
It's gatekeeping.
It is, but it's gatekeeping born out of a fear that nothing is sacred anymore.
This distrust of success isn't just about money, though. It gets personal. And this is where we dive into the conspiracy theories surrounding two absolute titans of indie media. Toby Fox, creator of Undertale, and Andrew Hussey, the creator of Homestuck.
And we need to establish the stakes here. Homestuck wasn't just a webcomic. In the early 2010s, it was a phenomenon. It crashed servers. It had millions of words. It was like the Harry Potter of the very online.
And Undertale is one of the most acclaimed games of the last decade.
Absolutely.
Which makes the way this thread talks about them so wild. They call them Fobby and Hooey, that's Hussey spelled with a cent sign, just to drive the sellout point home.
Of course.
But with Hussey, they go way beyond he sold out. They seem to believe he didn't even write Homestuck.
This is the death of the author taken to a, like, a literal extreme. The users are spinning this elaborate theory that Homestuck was actually a collaborative effort carried by the music team and the artists.
And Hussey just took all the credit.
Right, that he's basically a fraud who took credit for a group project.
It gets so specific. There's a user claiming that a character named Roxy, who is a fan favorite, wasn't written by Hussey at all. They claim she was based on a specific person in Hussey's real life, someone known as IPGD, or maybe even his mother.
And that the story beats were influenced by his boy toys. It reads like a tabloid from an alternate dimension.
It does. But what's the underlying need here?
I think they just refuse to believe in the auteur genius. In a world of anomie, where institutions are crumbling and everything feels fake, the idea that one person could be that talented or create something that massive, it feels impossible.
So it's easier to believe it's a conspiracy.
Exactly. If Hussey is a fraud, or if he just stole ideas from his friends, then the world makes sense again. Success is just luck or theft. It validates their own cynicism.
Wow.
If genius is a lie, then they don't have to feel bad about not achieving it themselves.
That is bleak.
Hmm.
But it connects perfectly to how they look at visual art. Hmm. You'd think if they hate these big complex narratives, maybe they'd like a simple comic strip.
To a thing.
But no, they have turned their laser sights on Nancy.
Nancy, the classic newspaper strip about a little girl with frizzy hair, it's been running since the 1930s.
Right, but it was taken over recently by a cartoonist named Olivia James. And this thread treats Nancy like it's the Zapruder film. They analyze every single panel. And they mostly hate it. They call her Nankreesh, again with the nicknames.
And what's fascinating here is the visual critique. Olivia James uses a very minimalist, modern style. And the users in the thread interpret this minimalism as a moral failure.
They describe the backgrounds as black voids. They point out the blocky art and say it looks like clip art. There's this one discussion about a strip where the artist makes a joke about real time, basically implying the panels were drawn in a minute.
And the thread just explodes.
Half of them think it's a genius meta-commentary, and the other half think it's creative stagnation.
And then the strip wins an Eisner Award.
Which is basically the Oscars for comics.
Right, and the thread sees this not as a victory for a fresh voice, but as proof that the entire industry is broken. They point to the black voids and the weird proportions and say, look, the elites are awarding mediocrity.
It just reinforces their whole worldview that standards have collapsed.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, we have to talk about Sinfest.
Oh, boy. This is another webcomic by Tatsuya Ishida. And if the Nancy discussion is forensic, the Sinfest discussion is just pure confusion.
Sinfest is a really strange case. It started in the early 2000s as this slick, funny strip. Then the author became a radical feminist ally for a few years, and now...
Now the thread describes him as shifting to the alt-right, or purely conspiracy-minded.
It's whiplash. The users are just trying to parse the ideology, and they can't. One user calls the comic a baffling domestic terror act of a joke.
They point out these massive contradictions, like the comic will criticize the USSR for being chauvinist, but then five strips later, it's idealizing some other authoritarian aesthetic.
It is ideological soup. But my view here is that Sinfest is actually the perfect artistic representation of anomie. The creator is flailing. He's jumping from one extreme belief system to another. Feminism, alt-right, anti-vax, whatever, desperately looking for something that exclaims the chaos of the world.
And the users in the thread are mocking him.
Yeah.
But
they're kind of in the same boat. They're all just looking for a narrative that sticks.
And that's search for a narrative leads right into the real world.
Mm-hmm.
We need to touch on the politics in the thread. And I want to be clear to you listening. We are reporting on what's in the thread, not endorsing it.
Not at all. Because it gets dark.
It does. There's a discussion about a news event, an ICE shooting involving a man the users identify as Jewish. Now, a normal reaction might be shock, or sadness, or a debate about policy.
Wow.
The reaction in this thread is detached, ironic, and focused on 19th century diplomacy. They start referencing the Don Pacifico affair.
Which, for those who didn't major in Victorian history, was an incident in 1850. A British citizen in Greece got his house attacked, and the British government basically blockaded Greece and nearly started a war over this one guy.
So they're bringing up an 1850 blockade to talk about a modern shooting.
They are using it as an analogy. They're speculating that this one shooting could trigger a massive diplomatic fallout, making America a pariah state. It's this grand conspiratorial thinking.
They don't see a tragedy. They see a domino falling in a geopolitical game.
And they toss around these heavy, toxic terms. Zogue, woke milk, BRICS, propaganda. It feels like they don't trust anything. Not the media, not the government, not the opposition.
It's the numbness again.
It's the numbness. If you believe every news story is a psyop and every cultural movement is woke milk, which implies it's weak or artificial, then you don't have to engage with it emotionally.
They even hate cool Japan.
Yeah, that one is oddly specific. Cool Japan is the Japanese government's campaign to export anime and pop culture.
And the users here call it reductive and pathetic.
There's this fascinating bit of gatekeeping where they talk about Zoomers, younger fans, getting the ick from anime styles. They claim these new fans have been ruined by Western cartoons like Steven Universe, so they can't handle the edginess of real anime.
It's the same pattern as the Lisa debate.
Exactly. They feel like their distinct niche culture is being invaded by the mainstream, by the Zoomers and the normies, and sanitized. They want their hobbies to remain jagged and difficult.
Which explains why, if the present is full of woke milk and Zoomers, they are retreating violently into the past, specifically to the year 2006.
The golden age, apparently.
We have to talk about Bully, the Rockstar game. For this thread, Bully is the holy grail.
It is. And it's really interesting to break down why. Bully is a game set in a boarding school. You play a delinquent. And the users love it because, in their words, it has edges.
You can shove kids into lockers. You can give girls wedgies.
Yes.
Which, I mean, it sounds incredibly juvenile.
It is juvenile. But to them, that juvenile behavior represents authenticity. They argue that in a modern game, all that stuff would be removed or sanitized to avoid offending anyone. They see Bully as a time capsule of a world before cancel culture.
But they make a deeper point, too. It's not just about being mean. They compare it to Grand Theft Auto.
Right. This is the sole argument. In GTA, you can blow up a city block, and 5 minutes later, everything is back to normal. It's meaningless chaos.
But in Bully...
In Bully, if you beat up a kid, the prefects chase you. The school has rules. There is a hierarchy. They call it structure versus meaningless chaos.
That's actually a really profound distinction. They crave structure.
Exactly. For a group of people who act like anarchists online, they are desperate for a world with rules. They love Bully because actions have consequences. In their view, the modern world and modern games are just soft, squishy, consequence-free zones.
This desire for consequence and grit also explains their absolute hatred of Valve. Which surprised me, because Valve gave us Half-Life and Portal.
But this thread, they despise Valve writing.
Why?
They hate the smugness. That's the word that keeps coming up. Think about the dialogue in Portal or a lot of modern Marvel movies. It's witty. It's ironic. The characters are always kind of winking at the audience. It's very...
Joss Whedon?
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
And the users in this thread hate that. They view it as insecure. They attack characters like Alex Vance in Half-Life or the Wind Ranger announcer in Dota. They call them obnoxious.
Because they talk too much.
Exactly. They interpret that constant quipping as a lack of sincerity. They prefer the silent protagonist or the gritty anti-hero who doesn't make jokes. To them, silence is soulful. Irony, at least the mainstream kind of irony, is soulless.
There's a specific rant about Half-Life levels. Zen and Sand Traps were complete horseshit.
To be fair, Sand Traps is a level where you can't touch the sand or giant bugs eat you, and it is annoying. But the intensity of the anger, it's not just this level is hard, it's this level is a personal insult to me as a gamer.
It breaks the immersion.
It breaks the immersion. It reminds them they're just playing a game made by fallible humans.
So let's pull this all together. We've got a group of people who think indie devs are sellouts, authors are frauds, comic strips are lazy, politics is a conspiracy, and modern games are smug. Who is the person sitting behind the keyboard writing this?
Well, if we profile the learner of this thread, we are looking at someone who is incredibly knowledgeable. They know the history of indie dev, they know of Victorian diplomacy, they know the nuances of comic art, but they are trapped.
Trapped by enemy.
Yes. They feel the world has lost its standards, God is dead, and we have killed him, but replace God with authenticity. So their response is to just tear everything down.
It's a defense mechanism.
Totally. It's armor. If you assume everything is fake, you can never be disappointed. If you assume the world is a sewer, you don't have to try to clean it up. You just build a bunker, fill it with copies of Bully on the PS2, and mock everyone outside.
That brings us back to that opening quote, the psychotic break.
Right. You either care about what happens in the world and have some kind of psychotic break.
Right.
Or you get numb to it all.
These guys chose numbness.
They did. But here's the question I want to leave you with. We can judge these Anons for being toxic, and they are. We can judge them for being conspiracy theorists.
Oh.
But look around at the actual world right now. Look at the content overload, the political chaos, the commercialization of everything.
Is the world actually driving people insane?
Exactly. If the environment really is that overstimulating, is the detachment we see in this thread a symptom of mental illness? Or is it a survival strategy? When these users obsess over the soul of a 2006 video game, are they just being nostalgic jerks? Or are they the canaries in the coal mine, sensing that we've lost something vital that we might never get back?
Are they crazy? Or are they just the only ones noticing that the Emperor has no clothes and also no soul?
That's the question.
Something to think about the next time you comment on a thread. Thanks for diving deep with us. We'll see you in the next one.